You're listening to the ISOCA podcast. In this CyberPros Exchange series, we're speaking with Dustin Brewer, Manager and Cybersecurity Product Platform Developer, and Frank Downs, Director and Subject Matter Expert of ISOCA's Cybersecurity Practice. In this episode, we're discussing the ransomware attack that affected the city of Baltimore, located in Maryland in the United States. So to begin, can you give us a little bit of background and some timeline on the vulnerability that was used to leverage the ransomware attack on the city of Baltimore?
May 7th, there was a large-scale ransomware attack that actually pretty much just shut down Baltimore City as far as any of their information systems go. Now, the interesting thing about this attack was that we've seen it before. We saw it on a very large scale back in 2017 when a group called the Shadow Brokers actually got a hold of some alleged NSA exploits, hacking utilities. One of those exploits was called Eternal Blue. And what Eternal Blue did was it actually attacked the server message block within Windows systems, right? So basically anything that has to do with Windows file sharing, Windows printer sharing, server message block, right? That's, you know, anybody who runs an enterprise network with Windows or has run a Windows network before, we all know what server message block is. But for those of us who don't, it's basically just the ability to be able to share files, share printers, share services in a Windows network. This was an exploit that was pretty substantial in that it affected everything from Windows XP all the way up to Windows 8.1, and even some Windows 10, depending on how you have your setup and if you had to do keep a capability in there for older systems. So it only affected server message block version 1. Most are server message block version 2, but if you had an older system, then you actually had to you had to do that kind of a backwards compatibility. So what happened was Shadow Brokers released this exploit. As soon as it was released, I believe either the NSA or somebody told Microsoft, Microsoft came out with a patch. So the patch has been out since 2017. Regardless of that patch, WannaCry happened, right? In which affected many computers across specifically the European Union and almost made it to America, except for the attack was actually mitigated by a security researcher in London. And he hit the kill switch and it stopped the attack from happening. So, again, here's what we have. Here's the timeline. 2017, Shadow Brokers tries to release some alleged NSA exploits. Microsoft comes out with a patch immediately. People don't patch. WannaCry happens. And again, this was all 2017. Microsoft actually brought Windows XP, quote unquote, out of retirement in that they actually created a patch for Windows XP for this particular exploit as well. So again, we've had a patch for this since 2017. Fast forward to May 7th, 2019. Baltimore City, the entire government basically gets shut down. What's kind of coming out in reports now, we don't know for sure, but what's being reported is that the Eternal Blue exploit was actually the exploit that was used to propagate this attack in order for the attack to spread. Now, Baltimore City is coming out, and just as a caveat, I lived in Baltimore for 8 years. I love Baltimore City. I definitely consider it to be my second home. It's a great place. But now that Baltimore City officials are coming out, and they're actually blaming the NSA for this attack. So there's this interesting blame game that's going on. And, you know, we've been kind of trying to get away from this in cybersecurity. We've been trying to get away from the blame game, right? Like, no, an attack happens. Okay, let's not blame anybody. Let's go back and figure out what happened. Let's fix it. And then we can kind of go back and do lessons learned. You know, if there was gross negligence, obviously, yes, we'll play a little bit of the blame game. And we'll try to figure out who needs reprimanding or further action. But at the end of the day, basically what it came down to is that there was this exploit that was on a Windows machine that created a vulnerability within Windows machines. A patch came out 2 years ago for it. Obviously, the Baltimore City government did not patch, and here we are. Again, Baltimore City is somewhat blaming the NSA for this, which is, you know, it is what it is. They're blaming the NSA for it. Frank, I don't know if you want to jump in here and
yeah, they should probably also blame Windows for making an operating system.
Right.
that, you know, can be compromised based off this. This gets back to the whole due diligence element, right? The due diligence of when is the right time to patch. And it's different with every organization, but in this instance, it was a long, long time. I mean, if you look at the actual way that this was handled, when Eternal Blue first came out, Microsoft took it so seriously that they went back and updated Windows XP after they had stopped updating Windows XP. So here you have a piece of legacy software. They've stopped supporting it, said everyone needs to upgrade. No one's allowed to use XP anymore. Or let me rephrase. It's not a good business decision to use this software that we made anymore, right? This Eternal Blue concerned them so much that they said, we're going to update this anyway. We're going to make a specific patch to put out for this. That shows you how seriously Microsoft took that. So when Microsoft's taking it that seriously, and you see all these other companies taking it that seriously, and they're patching it, I mean, how long is too long in this instance? I honestly think that blaming NSA for this is, you know, kind of absurd. Because one, NSA's never come out and said, yes, this is from us. It's all alleged in this instance. And on top of that, I think that Baltimore is just trying to cover for the fact that I'd be surprised, you know, I too am from the area, right? I'd be surprised if Baltimore had an incident response plan, let alone a patch management policy, right? In this instance, it just seems to be another example of the blame game. So it's a little disheartening in that regard, especially to see that instead of trying to take active steps forward to fix the situation, it seems that there's just a lot of blame being pushed around. And that happens in a lot of different cybersecurity incidents, I should probably note. Baltimore's not unique in this instance. They're only unique in that they're actually trying to blame NSA in this instance. Oh, I've been hacked. It was clearly NSA's fault, right? An example with Equifax, right? You still had the blame game, not with anyone at the executive level, right? But they found that one mid-level engineer that they said, you tut tut, you didn't patch right. And he's seeing, 8 months in jail? You know, that's the equivalent of a slap on the wrist. Now, in this instance, for the company writ large, kind of ruined that engineer's life, but there was no real outcome, right? No real punishment that was placed on any of these companies until Moody's downgraded Equifax for something like this. And arguably, that's still not going to do much of anything, right? So I believe that, you know, this is an interesting reaction and one that, while the sadly typical, is typical for Baltimore, is one that's not going to fix the issue, in my opinion.
Some of us have legacy systems on our enterprise networks that are required to continue business operations because we have a proprietary piece of software. And that's okay, right? The trick here, it's not okay, but it's what we have to do, right? We have to work with it. So in working with it, what we usually do is defense in depth, right? So instead of, you know, having these machines where they're exposed completely on the network, we put extra precautions. We put extra controls in place. So it is vulnerable to this type of attack, or it is vulnerable to this exploit. And here's what we're going to do to mitigate that, at least to an acceptable level. Right. And this is something that just, it's just something that every once, you know, it gets overlooked. It's one of those things that just kind of happens within a network.
And so specifically, what systems or city services were affected by this ransomware attack?
You know, that's a really good question. I think, and Frank, if you have more information on this, I from what I understand, they're releasing it piecemeal right now. They haven't really come out and said exactly what systems were affected.
It's a lot. I mean, it's a lot of key systems in Baltimore. The one that was really interesting was no one can it stopped all real estate purchases in Baltimore there for a while. So they're literally holding people hostage for being able to even buy a house. In this instance, I mean, they've attacked so many different elements of it. It's almost as bad. I would argue it's almost as bad, if not worse, than what happened in Georgia a few years ago, where people were literally coming in and having to pay their utility bills with dollars and cents, right? With physical money. And in this instance, I mean, it's so bad in this instance that Google even disabled Baltimore's Gmail accounts during this whole situation because they said, oh, no, 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 you're not going to try and, you know, spread it through us. I mean, almost every part of the Baltimore municipality was touched in some way or another. I mean, bills are getting jacked up. Like I said, I've never seen it to the extent that they said, yeah, you can't even buy property in this instance. I mean, we've seen the whole, oh, no, you're not going to be able to pay your bill. Oh, no, you're not going to be able to, you know, you know, do some kind of business with the government. I mean, this is like taking it to the next level of saying, you can't even do person-to-person business in a lot of instances as well.
Right. And I think with WannaCry, you know, the big difference between this attack and WannaCry is WannaCry, it seems like the majority of the systems that were affected with WannaCry were actually hospital systems, right? So had patient information and all kinds of other stuff. This is actually a city that's kind of been shut down by a piece of ransomware. So hopefully other cities are like, oh, you know what? We have Windows 7 boxes and we haven't done our upgrades yet either, you know, or hopefully this is kind of eye opening for everybody who has legacy systems and, you know, who still need to use Windows XP for whatever reason or Windows 7 for whatever reason. Again, all the way up to Windows 10, right? As long as you have server message block version 1.0 installed, like, and running, you are susceptible to this attack. Hopefully this is eye-opening to a lot of other institutions in that, okay, you know what, it's time to take a look at our patch management. It's time to take a look at our different defense mechanisms and see, okay, if we can't patch it, what do we need to do to defend ourselves against this attack or against this type of attack?
Now, you touched on how they blamed the NSA a little bit for this incident, but aside from that, has the city of Baltimore done a decent job addressing the attack?
Baltimore's response so far, from what I can tell, and Frank, you can correct about this if I'm wrong as well. We haven't seen any mitigation that they've tried to do, or other than paying. They're paying the attackers in order to get the password to unlock their files and unlock their systems. I think I read a figure somewhere around $100,000 so far.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, it was what they paid. So. That's what they're doing, and that might be what they have to do, to be honest with you. So I'm not saying that's a bad way to go. Now, as far as what to do from here, obviously updating their systems, but they haven't released anything to that effect yet. Like, oh, here's what we are doing in the future. Here's how we're going to mitigate these kinds of attacks in the future.
Yeah, I agree with Dustin. There doesn't really seem to be anything that they've put out that has really shown addressing the core issue. Right now, I think they're still kind of in a bit of a tailspin of let's pay and who do we blame. It's a little disappointing, but hopefully it's something that'll be learned from.
Right. I think as a whole, you know, again, the cybersecurity community, the information technology community as a whole is kind of moving away from the blame game, right? We don't need to blame, you know, again, unless there's gross negligence involved, which in this case there might be. We won't know for a little bit here until they can get a proper investigation done and do some forensics and figure out, where this whole thing started from. I read somewhere that it did start from a phishing attempt. Somebody downloaded something, and it came from a possible BYOD of an employee. So, you know, because we have been getting away from this blame game, it's interesting to see it kind of regress here, right? It kind of did. It's like, oh, nope, this is the NSA's fault. And did the NSA create the tool? Well, they haven't said they did or whether they did or not, right? So we don't know. If the NSA did create the tool, is it the NSA's fault? I mean, it's been 2 years, right? Where do we draw the line here where, oh, you know what? We created this thing accidentally. It leaked. And, we patched it 2 years ago and we've sent out a patch for it 2 years ago, but you still haven't patched your systems yet. So again, instead of playing the blame game, I'm not blaming Baltimore. I'm not blaming anybody. I just think that, you know, let's look into this. Let's find out what happened and let's take some lessons learned here and let's apply them to our own systems and let's apply them to our own enterprises and make sure that, you know, we don't make the same mistakes. That's really the most important thing to take away from here, from this lesson that we're learning with Baltimore, is not, you know, hey, whose fault was this? Not, oh, watch out for those NSA guys because, you know, they're going to create these attacks and then, you know, they're going to get leaked and then, you know, some, you know, advanced persistent threat or, you know, threat actor is going to, you know, utilize this exploit in order to get into your network. Instead of playing that game, play the let's look at what happened in Baltimore. Let's tabletop it in our own enterprise. Where are our weak points? Where can we learn from Baltimore? Where, you know, or, you know, help out Baltimore? Like, hey, here's what we did, you know, Baltimore, when we had the same issues you guys did. Here's what we did in order to mitigate this. And, you know, here's how we did it within budget. And, you know, just kind of getting together as a community and actually talking this out and figuring out where do we go from here.
And whereas Dustin is being very magnanimous in his response, I'm totally blaming Baltimore for poor patch management procedures. Personally, I mean, again, there, yes, let's, it's not, blaming does not fix the issue. However, it does identify where the failure may have been, in this instance. And I do think while, yes, we can, you know, not play the blame game for this happened, it's terrible and so forth. The response, just like in everyday life, the way you respond to things that happen, can be real indicative in the situation. And I think that the focus that's being tried, wherein they're trying to shift the focus from what happened to them to, you know, in this instance, a government organization that has not stated one way or the other that they have any awareness or that this has anything to do with them is really a futile effort. And in my opinion, just, and again, the Frank Downs opinion, not reflective of any other organization or individual, is really indicative of a poor management strategy.
Absolutely. I'm not saying that we don't have to identify what happened or individuals who allowed it to happen. Again, that's part of the lessons learned, right? That's part of figuring out where we go from here. But what I am saying is that, you know, as far as, you know, playing the blame game and putting blame on, you know, our particular entity or, you know, whoever's fault it was, it's a little too early for that, honestly. The investigation is ongoing, right? So it's really hard for us to pinpoint where it went wrong or what happened. At least, you know, Baltimore City, it's hard for them to pinpoint that quite yet. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens in the weeks to come. It's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds.
And so let's say we have a listener who has not patched for this vulnerability. What's your advice to them?
Patch.
Patch.
Please patch. It's been 2 years. Do it. Yeah. Please. We're patch. Just thinking about your career, not even ours at this point.
Patch. So, and aside from that, and that's the simple answer, right? Like just patch, just, you know, hit the update button, you know, whatever it is you need to do, you know, get this problem under control. That being said, like I said earlier, sometimes we have legacy systems that we can't patch for whatever reason. Maybe we can't disable server message block, you know, version one. Maybe, you know, that we have a proprietary system that still utilizes these older operating systems and these older protocols. There's other ways. There's other mitigation techniques, right?
If you do have that, please sandbox as much as possible.
Right, exactly.
And make so many backups. Right. So many backups.
So I think Frank and I would both suggest the ISO 27000 series. 27001 comes to mind. The NIST cybersecurity framework.
Yeah, you know, 853 Rev 4, if you really want to get into the weeds, is a really good read for these.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, using these frameworks that... So again, some are freely available, some are not. Using NIST, it is freely available, and it's something that it's a tool. It's a utility that you can use in order to find these gaps in your security operations and in your policies. So utilizing, you know, proven, tried and true cybersecurity frameworks, I'd say that's a big part of it.
And so some people say that you should never pay ransomware just because it encourages more ransomware, while others say that if you want your files back, you kind of have to. Where do you two stand on this issue, or do you think that it might vary depending on the situation?
I think you have a couple different options here. If you have backups, don't pay. I mean, backups are super helpful. If you have the money but don't have backups, you may want to pay. And if you don't have the money and don't have backups, I pursue looking for a new vocation.
Yeah, there's, at the end of the day, there's nothing you can do other than pay unless you have backups. So I understand the thought process, but, you know, the kind of we don't negotiate with terrorists thought process, right? I get that. Unfortunately, if you want your files back, that might be the only way you can get your files back. So I don't necessarily begrudge Baltimore City for paying out some of these payments in order to get their data back.
Yeah, and relatively speaking, it's relatively cheap, all things considered. It's a, you know, when you're talking about a municipality, I'm not saying 100, I mean, 100 grand is 100 grand, right? And that's a lot of money. I'm not trying to minimize that. But 100 grand compared to what's Baltimore's population? Last I checked, it was like 750,000 people or 800,000 people. Yeah, I mean, it's in all their data and business, it's kind of worth it.
Thanks, Dustin and Frank. And that's all we have time for in this episode of the podcast. But if you're interested in learning more from Dustin and Frank every month, be sure to subscribe to the ISOCA podcast. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a rating on whatever app you use to listen to podcasts.